Up is the news.
Tensions remain high between the U.S. and Russia over an American spy drone crash over the Black Sea. The U.S. says it has evidence Russia caused the crash. Iran, Russia and China hold the second day of their joint military drills in the Sea of Oman. And also ahead, New Zealand joins other Western countries to put a ban on China's popular social media app TikTok.
Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us.
Our top story this hour, the Pentagon has released a video it says provides evidence that a Russian fighter jet caused a U.S. spy drone to crash into the Black Sea this week. The Pentagon says the video shows that the Russian fighter jet clipped the propeller of the American MQ-9 Reaper drone, causing its crash near Ukraine. The video was filmed by the drone, which the U.S. says was on a regular reconnaissance mission in international airspace. Russia denies that and sees the incident as a provocation. Moscow says the aircraft went down after making, quote, sharp maneuvers. It has warned of a proportionate response in case of future provocations. That's while the U.S. says it will continue to fly and operate wherever international law allows. The incident was the first direct encounter between the two powers since the Ukraine war began in February last year. We were earlier joined by Greg Simmons, a researcher at the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies. Let's take a listen to his comments on the heightened tensions between the two powers following the Black Sea incident.
I mean, as you noted, Colin Powell went before the UN with irrefutable evidence of weapons of mass destruction of Iraq, which this was the lie which is based on destroying Iraq. They've shot down, the Iranian airliner in Iranian airspace and claimed all kinds of things. So they have a history of lying and to get their way. There are a whole lot of problems with their so-called evidence. And I've been looking at some of these videos which have been emerging today. And on one, they have the claim that it hit the propeller of the drone. But if you look at the video, the propeller looks different in different parts of the video. On one part of the video, it had these yellow markers on the blade, and on the other, it did not. So, this seems to be yet another lie, and it does not answer the question why they had a drone with very sophisticated surveillance and spying equipment flying in an area 60 kilometers from Sevastopol, in an area designated by the Russians as part of the area of military operations in the Ukraine war, with its transponder off.
Iran, China and Russia are holding joint military drills in the northern part of the Sea of Oman. The drills, dubbed the Maritime Security Belt 2023, aim to safeguard security and peace in regional waters. Our correspondent Mehdi Abbasian has more.
Chinese and Russian vessels have entered Iran's territorial waters to hold a joint maritime exercise in the Sea of Oman. Delegates from Pakistan and Kazakhstan navies will also be there as observers. China has dispatched a guided missile destroyer to the area, while Russia has sent a naval group that consists of a frigate and a medium sea tanker. At the first stage of the drill, the naval officers of the three countries reviewed episodes of the trilateral exercise on maps, received instructions, and held tactical briefings. Later, the naval commanders of the three countries held a joint presser. The Iranian Navy's deputy commander said the main aim of the joint exercise is to help safeguard security in the northern part of the Indian Ocean.
The northern part of the Indian Ocean is one of the most important maritime routes for international trade and transfer of energy. Therefore, providing security in combating piracy and terrorism requires cooperation among regional countries and allies with common interests in this region.
Meanwhile, Chinese and Russian Navy commanders said the joint exercise further demonstrates the preparedness of the participating countries to maintain security, and it will also deepen their practical cooperation. The trilateral drill helps protect peace and stability in the region.
The trilateral exercise of Iran, China, and Russia has a four-year-long history, and our goals are clear. Our motto is, together to provide peace and security. Therefore, we are only pursuing the interests of the Islamic Republic of Iran as well as collective interests of countries in the north of the Indian Ocean. We are cooperating with China and Russia in order to defend our interests and counter maritime piracy and terrorism.
This joint exercise is the third of its kind, following similar drills involving the Iranian, Chinese, and Russian navies in 2019 and 2022. The main stage of the Security Bond 2023 exercises involve forces from the Marine and Airborne units of Iran's Navy and the IRGC, as well as Russian and Chinese flotillas. Mahdi Abbasian from the location of the drill.
Now, Mehdi has spoken to Iranian Navy Commander Rear Admiral Shahram Irani about the ongoing drills in the Sea of Oman. Let's take a listen to the Iranian military official's comments.
Since the drills are based on maritime security and safety of maritime navigation, and the security of maritime navigation throughout the world matters to us, therefore, we focused on coordination, how to save vessels, and also how to save vessels that are in emergency conditions. And another part was related to combating maritime terrorism, because today there are some foreign forces who are present in the area unjustifiably. Therefore, we try to make use of our capacities, and we try to carry out the exercises successfully.
Iran has slammed Germany for making false claims on its nuclear program a day after the German Chancellor said the Islamic Republic should be prevented from obtaining nukes. Iran's Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said Olaf Scholz's comment echoes Israel's claims. Kanani said it's surprising that Germany tries to portray Iran's peaceful nuclear program as a threat, while Tehran's activities have been under tight inspections of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Kanani criticized Berlin for remaining silent on Israel's massive nuclear arsenal, which he said poses a threat to the global peace. The spokesman underlined that independent nations are frustrated with such double standard approaches. He said those nations are becoming more and more certain that some Western countries' accusations against Iran are hypocritical and false. Jordan has slammed Israel's attacks against Palestinians in different parts of the occupied West Bank, including the city of Jenin. The Jordanian Foreign Ministry urged Israel to stop its relentless attacks and unilateral measures. Now, on Thursday, regime forces raided Jenin, killing four Palestinians. The same day, Israeli settlers backed by troops also tried to break into an archaeological site in the city of Nablus. The Israelis have increased violence against Palestinians in the past several months, with raids and attacks taking place on a daily basis. At least 88 Palestinians have lost their lives across the West Bank this year alone. 17 of those killed are children. Every year in March since 2005, pro-Palestinian activists directed by the BDS movement hold activities and events against the Israeli apartheid policies. Our correspondent Ola Al-Asi reports from the besieged Gaza Strip.
The Israel Apartheid Week has started in Gaza and in many cities around the world. This is aimed at mobilizing grassroots support for the BDS campaign to isolate apartheid Israel in the global community, replicating the resistance movement against the South African apartheid. The week started with a message of solidarity to the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip from Mandela Mandela, the grandson of the South African leader Nelson Mandela. As part of its events, the BDS chose to screen a movie about horror experienced by a Palestinian young girl during the Nakba. The ethnic cleansing of Palestinians by Zionists in 1948.
Well, I think the way Israel reacted to Farha is very typical of Zionist propaganda. They wanted to suppress the Palestinian voice. They didn't want us to tell our own narrative. And I think the best way of confronting this campaign of hate and racism is by producing more cultural products.
Palestinian institutions play an important role in informing people of the history of Palestine through different mediums in order to build a generation that is capable of reclaiming its rights.
I think that the new generation is passionate about learning the truth and the history of the struggle because during their entire life they have experienced both physical and structural violence perpetrated by the Israeli occupation. They want to know why they suffer, are not allowed to travel, and live in poverty. All this leads them to question the roots of all the problems.
The BDS movement has stressed the need to press ahead with the campaigns against the Israeli apartheid, especially because the regime has intensified its persecution to maintain a system of settler colonial oppression and domination over the Palestinian lives and land.
Recently, we witnessed a growing solidarity with the Palestinian people, especially when the new far-right fascist cabinet took office and Israeli massacre increased in the West Bank. We aspire to reach the international community, not only in the civil global community, to boycott, divest from and sanction Israel.
In Israel Apartheid Week, Palestinians reaffirmed their commitment to resisting occupation, exploitation, oppression, and apartheid, like any other people, by all means permitted under the international law and the UN General Assembly resolution, which includes armed struggle. Ola Al-Asi, Gaza.
New Zealand says it will ban China's popular social media app TikTok from lawmakers' devices, becoming the latest Western nation to put the restriction. Parliament officials say TikTok will be banned on all devices with access to the parliamentary network. They say the decision follows talks with colleagues across government and internationally. The restriction will begin at the end of this month. The US, Canada, Britain, and the European Union have already banned the video sharing app from devices operated by government staff. They've all cited security concerns that the app can share user information with the Chinese government. TikTok has rejected that, saying it has spent billions of dollars on data security. Beijing also says the bans are politically motivated, with the West trying to hinder China's development. Window Ju is a senior fellow at the Pangol Institution. He says the US and its Western allies are struggling to compete with China and explains how they are trying to confine Chinese development.
You have to look further beyond this TikTok thing, the US. Remember, this is all launched by the US. I call it a campaign basically against China, a new Cold War by the Biden government against China, simply because they can't compete with China in terms of economy, in terms of technology. So there is a fear and complexity in Washington that they could lose the number one global power, superiority. That's what they are concerned with. So they are doing whatever they can, basically fair and unfair, to attack China. You know, the lies about Xinjiang, the attack over Hong Kong, and of course, sending weapons to Taiwan. At the same time, banning high-tech free trade, for example, trading in technology, and then attack Chinese company Huawei, remember. You know, until now, they provided zero evidence of what Huawei has done wrong. Simply, there's accusation of what Huawei could do. And then, they almost, of course, they destroyed Huawei in terms of this high-tech, obviously 5G mobile phone because of the ban of the semiconductors. And now they are attacking TikTok for being too popular, for being too powerful.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with the students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, praise be to God, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and blessings be upon our Master, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and his pure progeny, particularly the vestige of God remaining on earth. Welcome, my dear ones, our youth, our teenagers. You have made this environment in this Husseinia very pleasant. Your pure hearts, your souls filled with passion. Illuminate the environment and make it pleasant. Wherever you may be, whatever the environment that might be, I have prepared some related topics which I would like to share with you today. My dear children, the first topic is about the 13th of Aban. Well, you have heard a lot about it. The 13th of Aban is a historic day. It is both historic and educational. When we say it is a historic day, it means that on this day, there were events that will remain in history. These events cannot be forgotten, and they should not be forgotten either. They are educational because there have been reactions as a result of these events that serve as a lesson for us. Make use of these experiences for the future of the country, for your future, and for the future of our nation. The future belongs to you.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
This day is an important day for us, but it also really agitates the Americans. This is a day that frustrates the Americans whenever it is commemorated. Your meeting, this meeting, when it is shown, you can be sure that the Americans will be angered by this gathering, this anthem, this communion. They will be agitated by it. Why? Because this day is the embodiment of the evil of the United States and its defeat. So those who think that the US is an untouchable power, when we look at the events that took place on this day, it becomes evident that this is not the case, that is completely vulnerable. This turns into an experience for us. Three events took place on this day, some of which are directly related to the Americans and others are indirectly related to them. One event was the exile of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, which took place on the 13th of Aban, November 4th, 1964. Why was Imam Khomeini sent into exile? Because a law was ratified by the direct order of Shah Muhammad Reza Pahlavi to the parliament of that day.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witching.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
American policing is violent, humiliating, and dehumanizing. It has led to thousands of avoidable deaths. Since the 2020 murder of George Floyd, police killings have only continued at a rate of over 1,000 people per year. Black people, who account for 13% of the U.S. population, accounted for 27% of those fatally shot and killed by police. Cruel policing. There have also been high-profile cases from Keenan Anderson, who shouted, "They're trying to George Floyd me," to Tyree Nichols, who was brutally killed by police.
Relax.
Man, I can't breathe my face. Just get up. Ugh.
What do you want?
I can't breathe. Please, the knee in my neck. I can't breathe shit.
They're trying to kill me.
Why is this happening at such an alarming rate anyway?
Very frankly, this is nothing new that's going on in this country. America was built off the blood and the pain of my ancestors. America has always been killing black men. This did not just start this generation. This is just the first generation that's able to see it. Why it keeps going is because the people in power allow it to keep going. When you're dealing with racism, when you're dealing with discrimination in jobs, discrimination in housing, discrimination on the banks. You understand that you're in a society.
America, of course, was not the only slave-holding country in the West that committed horrible things against black people. While other Western countries seem to have distanced themselves from the shameful legacies of the history of slavery, America is lagging behind.
I think America, like many,
states that have the history of colonization, imperialism, and so forth, are yet to, and this is predominantly within the global north, these countries have to confront that. And America is not unique in this particular context. I suppose if one is to look at America's uniqueness, it would be in the difficulty to confront that particular history in a fashion that is honest and truthful. If you look at countries like South Africa, when they looked at, how best you reshape a society that has been divided by apartheid and so forth, they looked at a holistic societal approach. We can question the efficacy, but what we can look at within the context of the discourse we're having is that historically, if these issues are not discussed, like in South Africa, they had that discussion. The Truth Commission, right? Truth and Healing Commission, I think they called it at the time.
According to the Pew Research Survey, Black adults are about 5 times as likely as whites to say they've been unfairly stopped by police because of their race or ethnicity. What are the root causes of this discrimination?
Every Black American feels a little nervous when a police officer arrives behind them, maybe even is approaching them, because we've seen so much abuse, so much trauma. We all need therapy. We know that it only takes a look, just saying the wrong thing, and you might end up wrestling with the police. And I truly believe, this is what's causing some of the panicking that you see in these videos with Black civilians. When you see someone, trying to escape the police, it's not like always, I have something on me, or, I'm a criminal and I want to run. No, sometimes it's just like, I don't want to die.
Black people have been historically subject to decades of segregation, disinvestment, redlining, and mass incarceration. This legacy still shows itself in the form of heavy and disproportionate surveillance and violence by police.
Black people, my people, are captured and contained into, and through generations, right? New mechanisms to further punish, to further destroy any element of dignity and history and language. And then after that, introduce an abolishment movement of slavery and so forth, and put them into society with no instruments of survival, no education, no critical frameworks that enable a human existence to at least demonstrate parity and enable people to be emboldened to do it for themselves. Nothing of the sort. They're simply left at their own whim, right, and are expected to survive and historically perpetuate. We've seen a lot of great movements, from the, as I pointed to, the civil acts, Civil Rights Act, signage in 1964. And I definitely see that as a step forward. But we've never seen any great policies that look at the holistic institutions from a fundamental basis as to what is the idea that drives it, social class and so forth, but furthermore, how racism plays into that particular issue.
The same survey shows nearly two-thirds of Black adults, that's about 65%, say they've been in situations where people acted as if they were suspicious of them because of their race or ethnicity. So it's not just the police, it's like a culture.
I would say it's a culture of ignorance, a culture of stupidity. This is nothing to be happy about. This is animalistic. To be suspicious of someone because of the color of their skin, some of the most loving, some of the most successful people I have ever met in the world was Black people. And because of their skin, do you see how ignorant that sounds, brother, to even have a discussion like that? But when you're conditioned from a child to think that black people are criminals, to think that all black people are in gangs, to think that all black people might want to rob you, and you hear the hip hop music and it's all kill this dude, kill that dude, then you begin to think maybe black people are dangerous.
Heavy militaristic police presence, frequent stops and searches based on pretext, and disparaging language are all evidence that police view black and brown people with suspicion and fear. These groups of people are not served by police, rather, they are subjugated by them.
Imagine me walking down the street and someone felt a certain type of way about me. You don't even know I'm a 7-time author. I'm a professional basketball player. But because of our melanin that we have in our skin, because of our woolly hair, some people are intimidated by that. And it's not just a culture of ignorance, it's also fear. A lot of it is fear. Some people naturally fear black people, and we can't apologize for that. That's between you and God. That's your problem.
Every time there's a high-profile case of a black person killed by U.S. police, there will be so much talk and protest to address the root causes and so on. So what is it? Nobody knows the root causes, or is it that nobody listens, or perhaps both?
The reason why we are going through these experiences is because society is fundamentally impacted. And then the representatives of society through policing, through social work and care work services, through the education system, the perception of teachers amongst black children, especially teachers who are in their majority white, middle class, you know, how do they relate to these particular children? And how is that relation? How does that relation rather speak to society in the pupils' latter stages? Okay, so it's an entire societal prognosis that requires a holistic approach, not just policing, not just healthcare, but holistically, even within the very cultures of those that lead us politically.
Since the killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor prompted unprecedented uprisings, some racial justice groups have successfully pressured municipal lawmakers to cut police funding and reinvest the money in services. That call has been made every time there's been a high-profile case of police brutality.
If you want to change something, you do it through two ways in this world. Loss of life or loss of profit. Loss of life or loss of profit. Now, we don't advocate violence. That's something we don't do. And that's what people have to understand about Black Americans. We do not advocate violence. Don't let hip-hop music generalize you about Black people. That's ignorant. Don't let what you see in movies generalize you about Black. That's ignorant. You can't never let that happen. But we understand that if you want to change something, if you're not going to do loss of life, then you have to hit the loss of profit. Do we want to defund the police? No. We want to stop getting killed in the streets. We want to stop getting harassed. It's the police who wants to defund the police because they are the root to the problem. Don't ask us if we want to defund the police. The police wants to defund the police because they work for the people and they don't do their job.
Some people argue that police defunding will only lead to more crimes across the nation and something that would hurt the black community even more because they are seen as more vulnerable. Others also argue that this defunding will affect the poorer areas which are populated more by black people more than affluent neighborhoods of white people?
Yes, in the sense that I understand the principle of defunding the police, and I understand its foundational ideas around, you know, a much more policed society by, you know, coming from an abolitionist, if you will, mindset, which encouraged, you know, society to be engaged in its own policing and so forth, right? Societal responsibility. I understand that. But do I think defunding them? There are elements within defunding and the defunding campaign, and I don't think that they are actually thinking in the classical sense that I was describing. I was simply giving a historical perspective. But if I'm to look at the things that I do agree with, it's that there has to be societal engagement. And this is one of the tenets that they're pushing for. So less funding towards policing and the militarization of policing, but much more funding going towards the societal aspects that this policing society has to help govern, right? In governing, right? In administering that society.
The conventional wisdom is that Democrats care about the needs of the black community more than Republicans. Do Democrats really care about African Americans, or are they pursuing some sort of political gains here?
Though, when it comes to social programs and much more grassroots-centered policies that would favor, you know, disadvantaged communities in which, you know, black Africans and black minority, as well as Latinos, Hispanics are in. Okay, so it does make sense where a lot of this mindset comes from. But politics in itself is changing from the notion of identity politics to wokeness to, you know, be it Marxist libertarianism and so forth. And all these different things are going through a process, and this is globally. But in America, we're seeing the same concerns, that what is taking much more prevalence through the emergence of Trump is perhaps a tiredness of the collective society in as far as liberalism policies have been working out, from a multilateral institution to globalization. How have we fared compared to other countries, right? So there's this bring back this greatness, right? But there is no greatness to really look at, considering that we have been discussing the history of slavery and how, you know, as black people in America, as the black Americans have been able to demonstrate a strong global soft power through their popular culture. But this has been fundamentally done through their own efforts, not a large number of policies that have been able to look at that from an institutional perspective that is fundamentally overwhelming, to the point that, you know, an entire populations can move away from poverty to the middle class. We're not seeing that. What we're seeing is something totally different. A society that came together and built its own stuff, and it now has a sort.
Political divisions are also apparent when viewing police misconduct toward racial and ethnic minorities. For example, a Pew Research Center poll found that 61% of Republicans compared to 21% of Democrats endorsed the belief that race was getting too much attention following the shooting of Michael Brown, an unarmed 18-year-old young black man who was fatally shot by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014.
This soft power that the black community now has to be bargained between the two. I think now the politics that black Americans now have to play is one of collective bargaining. What will you do for me as a consequence of my vote, as the Jewish community would do, as my other Indian sort of minority entities have been doing, communities rather have been doing, even here in England, right, to the point in which we now have in the UK, an Indian prime minister. So we have to use our collective bargaining, political soft power, as a tool that will lead to our own economic transformation, which means that the Christians, the black Christian community, has to collaborate with the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam has to collaborate with the black Jewish community, right? There needs to be that, you know, collective approach. Then when we have that collective approach, we can use that not only from a local policy standpoint, but equally the international, They are multilateral institutions that such an entity, such a collective bargaining instrument or institution would be able to do as a minority group amongst other international platforms, as to lobby for their own heritage, which to them will be inherently Africa.
Police are occupying forces in many urban black and brown communities. People of color too poor to live in a middle class or wealthier neighborhood because of decades of segregation, disinvestment, redlining, and mass incarceration are subjected to heavy and disproportionate surveillance and violence by police. Black people are twice as likely as white people to be shot and killed by a police officer.
We don't know if the world sees us. You know, like, so many people, oh, the United States is this, the United States, but do y'all see how Black Americans are being treated here? You know, we wonder, because we see how y'all, you know, our other countries, they're going through problems. You know, we send donations, we send money, we send help and support, but we wonder if people see us. We are wondering if people understand how badly we deserve reparations. When European Jewish people came out of the Holocaust, they got reparations the next day. You see how they solved their problem? They had their problem solved by reparations. So obviously reparations must be the solution, but nobody wants to talk about it. How do we stop these episodes from repeating themselves? Reparations. That's how it stopped for so-called Jewish people.
Reforming policing will require numerous changes that include improving, hiring, and training practices and establishing clear standards for what is proper policing, what constitutes misconduct, and appropriate and inappropriate use of force and policing tactics and tools.
I suppose the best way to avoid stoppage of such instances within a short-term context would be, of course, looking at policy. How best are we looking? How best can we reform the policing structure? And it could speak to, you know, the immediate need to not perhaps defund, but fund more diverse programs that are also inclusive, so that there's a multi-agency approach to policing that society. You have your social workers, healthcare groups, early child care intervention programs. You're looking at that whole society and approaching the problem from not one diagnosis, but rather a multitude of concerns that you want to deal with simultaneously. That would be a good short-term program that the Democrats perhaps could push. And I think the language in order for the Republicans to be agreeable to it is the policing aspect, the law and order, because you're not taking away funding. You're saying you're going to add more funding. But what you're going to try to do is to diversify how that funding is distributed, right? So it's reframing the language, looking at how best we can quickly intervene into communities from early intervention, so we'll be looking at a scale and indices that are, you know, we're looking at long-term results here. We're not looking at things that will help you win the next election, because I think that's the myopia of policymaking.
Prosecutors know the barometer for what we consider to be criminal conduct for police officers is extremely high, both legally and in the public's perception. Most people perceive that if a police officer did something, he or she was doing it for their protection or the greater good of society. So, the bar for charging and convicting police officers is higher than the bar for regular citizens. Prosecutors then often take more time to ensure that a case is solid before they bring charges, if ever.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Last Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah. To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to The Last Savior. I'm your host, Zainab Askari. Well, Allah's light on this earth has been in the form of the prophets, the imams, and sometimes the non-believers have made many, many efforts to extinguish this light, or also the friends of imams or the friends of prophets, for those who try to be among the army of imams. And we have one such personality in the time of Imam Zama Jallaha Tala Faraja, who is called Nafse Zakia. We are going to talk with guest speaker, who is Dr. Murtaza Karimi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Well, Dr. Karimi, we have been talking about Nafse Zakia, his name and titles. We talked about them, and in the same names and titles, we sometimes there were some narrations, although weak, but they were saying that his name is Muhammad ibn Hassan. Talking about his titles, there were some narrations which deduced that he is from the lineage of Quraysh. I would want you to expand these narrations more so that we can have some idea about the lineage of Nafse Zakia.
So, as you rightly mentioned, according to one narration, he is from Quraysh. And according to some other narrations, he is Muhammad ibn al-Hassan, that is, his father's name is al-Hassan. But these narrations, talking about his father's name, are not that much authentic, so we cannot rely on them. But at least there is a possibility of his father being al-Hassan. Now, the question is that if we accept that his father's name is al-Hassan, now, is this al-Hassan referring to his father's direct
name? Just a common person whose name is Hassan, or Imam
or
Hassan.
Or it is referring to Imam al-Hassan, alayhi salam. Again, because of the fact that we do not have enough narrations, authentic narrations in this regard, we cannot come to a conclusion. But there is another narration, authentic narration in Al-Kafi by Sheikh Kulaini. This is a sahih narration, authentic one. Let me share this narration. In Al-Kafi, volume 8, page 224, hadith 285, we have the following narration. The Imam says, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam asked God for permitting him for reappearance, and then one of the close friends of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam comes to know that. فَيَبْتَدِرُ الْحَسَنِ إِلَى الْخُرُوجِ. He comes to Al-Hassani and informs him of the news, and then that Hassani begin his uprising, and in the city of Mecca. But the people of Mecca, they fight him back and they kill him and behead him and send his head to Ash-Shami, the man from Syria. Then Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam would reappear. Now the point is that al-Hassani, of course, in the narrations is usually referring to the progeny of Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam.
All right.
But now the question is that whether this al-Hassani is the same an-Nafs Zakiya or not.
Yeah.
The narration is not that much clear, but at least there is a possibility of this al-Hassani, because he is also killed in the city of Mecca by the people of Mecca, and then Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam will reappear, and all these are true regarding Nafse Zakiya as well. If we accept this possibility that al-Hassani in this narration is referring to Nafse Zakiya, then we can conclude that Nafse Zakiya is from the progeny of Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam. I would like to repeat the fact that not all the details related to the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam are absolutely clear, and this is very natural. We have the same regarding some of the details of the Islamic laws in jurisprudence.
Yeah.
But I believe that the number of the narrations that we have received from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam will lead us. No one can be, I mean, having these narrations, the authentic ones, there is no way for claiming that we do not have enough proofs to know the Imam of the time. No, we talked about Sufyani and how his uprising is, and we talked about Khasf Baida, and later we'll talk about that heavenly call. We talked about Yamani. So all these signs are clear, and before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, people will know who Nafs Zakiya
is.
Putting together all the narrations, all the titles, and how he is killed. We'll talk about his martyrdom later.
Yeah.
So although we may not know his name and his lineage, if we reject the point that I mentioned, but there are ways to recognize whether this person is the same Nafs Zakiya mentioned in the narrations or not. So there is no worry about that.
Yeah, we'll discuss more about the topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. We have Dr. Karimi with us in the studio, and we are talking about the certain signs of reappearance, and one of them is the martyrdom of Nafs Zakiya. So, Dr. Karimi, what is the goal of Nafs Zakiya since he is being martyred, and as we discussed in the narration, so what is actually his goal?
Regarding the goal of Nafs Zakiya and also the reason why he is killed, he is martyred by the people, there are two theories here, and I would mention both of them. According to the first answer to the first theory based on one narration, Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam sends Nafs Zakiya as his deputy to the people of Mecca, asking them to support Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam to complete his hujjah, his proof for the people of Mecca. The narration reads, this is a narration by Abu Basir quoting from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, يقول القائم لأصحابه, Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam addressing his companions says the following, يا قوم, إن أهل المكة لا يريدونني, the people of the Mecca do not want me. ولكني مرسل إليهم لأحتج عليهم بما ينبغي لمثلي أن يحتج عليهم. But I would like to send a person toward them so that I would complete my hujjah, my proof for them. Meaning that later they cannot bring any excuse that, oh Imam, we did not know you. فيدعو رجلا من أصحابه, he calls one of his companions and tells him to go to the city of Mecca. And Imam tells him that, فَقُلْ يَا أَهْلَ مَكَّةِ, say the following, addressing the people of the Mecca, أَنَا رَسُولُ فُلَانٍ إِلَيْكُمْ, I'm the messenger of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam towards you. وَهُوَ يَقُولُ لَكُمْ, and this is the message of the Imam, إِنَّا أَهْلُ بَيْتِ الرَّحْمَةِ, we are the progeny of the Prophet and the progeny of mercy. And this is interesting, unlike that violent picture that is drawn from Imam Mahdi alayhi salam in the minds of many people,
yeah,
and by some of the anti-Shias, the Imam introduces himself as Ahl Bayt al-Rahma. وَمَعْدَنُ الرِّسَالَةِ وَالْخِلَافَةِ وَنَحْنُ ذُرِّيَّةُ مُحَمَّدٍ. So the Imam introduces himself, and then Imam says that إِنَّا قَدْ ظُلِمْنَا, we have been oppressed during the course of the history. And now this is your time, I mean, from the time of the prophet until now, we have been oppressed. And now this is the time for you to help us. But the narration continues, فَإِذَا تَكَلَّمَ هَذَا الْفَتَى بِهَذَا الْكَلَامِ أَتَوْا إِلَيْهِ فَذَبَحُوهُ بَيْنَ الرُّكْنِ وَالْمَقَامِ. But as soon as this messenger talks about the message of the imam, they rush toward him and they kill him between Rukn and Maqam. وَهِيَ النَّفْسُ الزَّكِيَّةِ. And he is نَفْسُ الزَّكِيَّةِ. فَإِذَا بَلَغَ ذَلِكَ الْإِمَامِ. When the imam, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, comes to know about his martyrdom, he tells his companions that, didn't I tell you that the people of the Mecca do not want me? So this rather long narration is quoted by Allama Majlisi in Biharul Anwar, volume 52, page 307, hadith number 81.
Dr. Kering, we will discuss more about the topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned. Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. We have Dr. Karimi with us in the studio. And Dr. Karimi, you were talking about the goal of Nafs-e Zakiyyah.
So according to the narration that I mentioned before the break, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam sends Nafs-e Zakiyyah as his deputy and representative to go to the city of Mecca and invite them toward supporting and helping the Imam alayhi salam. This is one theory based on this narration. The second theory is that he is not sent by the imam. Rather, his aim is to provide the ground for the coming and uprising of the imam.
All right.
So somehow his act is before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. According to the first theory, it seems that he will come and he will be killed after the reappearance of the imam. But according to the second theory, his deed begins before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, although very, very much close to the reappearance. But his aim is to, as I mentioned, provide the ground for the
reappearance of Imam.
Yeah, and his uprising. And that is why he tries to somehow capture the city of Mecca and provide safety for Imam Mahdi alayhi salam in the city of Mecca. But unfortunately, he does not succeed, and finally, he is killed by the people of Mecca. This theory is based on that narration in Al-Kafi, which I mentioned previously. And in that narration, he is called Al-Hasani. So if we agree that this Al-Hasani is referring to An-Nafs al-Zakiyyah, we can act upon this theory saying that his aim is to provide the ground for the imam.
The uprising of Imam.
Exactly. So these are two theories, and each one of them is based on one narration. But the point is that at the end of the day, there is no doubt about the fact that An-Nafs al-Zakiyyah is a very virtuous man among the supporters and helpers of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Either he is sent by the imam as his deputy, or he tries to provide the ground for the coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Either way, he's, I mean, a great noble man trying to help the imam by providing the city of Mecca as a safe place for Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he is not able. The people of the Mecca, they come to fight him and they kill him around Kaaba, according to some narrations, between Rok and Maqam. And then, the hujjah, the proof over the people of the Mecca is complete. This is what we can say about the goals of the
Nafs-e-Zakiyyah
and his, deeds.
All right. So, we have came to know about Nafs-e-Zakiyyah, that first of all, he's a person with purity, or a person who is grown spiritually and to a perfect level. And he is mentioned in narrations, a respected person who is not allowed to be killed. And his killing will take place in between the Rukn and Maqam. And he's a significant personality who would be killed in the Haram month, in a prohibited month in which the wars are prohibited. And he will be killed in a prohibited place, that is Masjid al-Haram. And among his names was Muhammad ibn Hassan, which is not much authentic in the narrations. However, Nafs-e Zakia is one of the famous titles that he has, and about his lineage, one which could be relied upon is that he's mentioned as Al-Hassani, who would be killed, someone who is